evening, and welcome to Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Shamutella, and joining me, as always, are my ever-constant judges from the great British Empire of empiring the judging, Chris Haig and Tom Caldwell. Chris, that's a wonderful wig you're wearing.
Why, thank you. It's made from real judges. I don't know.
Nice. Made from real judges. That's amazing. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm good. We do have a tendency on the show to be judgmental, so this is a very appropriate movie to watch.
Yes, and you know what? I think this movie is perfect, and I'm falling in love with it, and I'm gonna leave my wife and marry this movie. Because this movie is perfect, because I've lost all sense of reason.
Oh, well, yeah.
I hope she doesn't listen to the show. My wife never listens to our show, so maybe. Anyway.
Awesome. Well, today we're talking about The Paradine Case, which is one of two Hitchcock films now that I've never seen. So I haven't seen this one, and I haven't seen the upcoming Under Capricorn. So I'm looking forward to becoming a Hitchcock completionist. But this was a definite first watch for me. It was interesting. But before we get into our discussion on the film, we're going to do a quick summary of it, and then we're going to do my history. So, Tom, you've drawn the short straw. Can you just give us a quick summary of the movie?
Attorney Anthony Keene agrees to represent Londonite Mrs. Paradine, who has been fingered in her husband's murder. From the start, the married lawyer is drawn to the enigmatic beauty, and he begins to cast about for a way to exonerate his client. Keene puts André Latour, the Paradine household servant, on the stand, suggesting he is the killer. But Keene soon loses his way in the courtroom, and his half-baked plan sets off a stunning chain of events.
Well, let's go into some trivia. The Paradine Case is a 1947 American film noir courtroom drama set in England, directed by Alfred Hitchcock and produced by David O. Selznick. The screenplay was written by Selznick and an uncredited Ben Hecht from an adaptation by Alma Revel and James Bridie of the 1933 novel of the same name by Robert Smithy Hickens. The film has a running time of 114 minutes, and boy, did we feel every minute of that. And Wikipedia lists the release date as December 29th, 1947. David O. Selznick had purchased the rights to the novel in 1933 before it was published, when Selznick was still at MGM, with Greta Garbo in mind to star. Indeed, Garbo was Hickens' inspiration for the creation of Mrs. Paradine. Garbo did consider doing the film, but ultimately turned it down as she decided to retire from acting. Howard Eastbrook was assigned to write the script at the time, and it was announced that John Barrymore, Lionel Barrymore, and Diana Wynward would star in the film. A draft of the script was submitted by MGM to the censors at the Hayes office, who warned that the script would likely be rejected since Mrs. Paradine was guilty of murder, adultery, and perjury, and later committed suicide. Spoilers for the book. They also objected to the judge being portrayed as a sadist who enjoyed sending people to their deaths. A new draft of the script was submitted, but not for some years, and in 1942, this script was approved. In 1946, another version was sent in, and this was also approved after the suicide was removed from the story. In 1946, it was announced that Alfred Hitchcock would direct the film and that Laurence Olivier would star as the barrister. But Olivier eventually turned the project down as he was preparing for his production of Hamlet. Hitchcock was interested in Ronald Colman for the part, as well as Garbo, who had not yet turned down the project, or even Ingrid Bergman for Mrs. Paradine. Other actors who were considered for the film include Maurice Evans, Joseph Cotten, Alan Marshall, James Mason for Anthony Keene, Hedy Lamarr for Mrs. Paradine, Claude Rains for Lord Thomas Horfield, and Robert Newton for Mrs. Paradine's lover. In the end, Hitchcock pushed for Gregory Peck, then at the peak of his box office appeal. Anne Todd was loaned from the Rank organization to play his wife, and Selznick settled on Alida Valli, considered one of the more promising actresses in the Italian cinema from Mrs. Paradine. The Paradine Case was the last film made under Hitchcock's 7-year contract with Selznick, and it had been suggested that Hitchcock was tired of the association by that time. In an interview with Francois Truffaut, Hitchcock said that he and his wife Alma Revel wrote the first draft of the script together before bringing in Scottish playwright James Birdie to do a polishing, but Selznick was dissatisfied with the result and would view the previous day's rushes, do a rewrite, and send the new scenes to the set to be shot. According to his biographer, Donald Spotto, Hitchcock's disgust with the content and method that were forced upon him conspired to produce an uneasy atmosphere from which Hitchcock could scarcely wait to extricate himself. Gregory Peck said of the director, he seemed really bored with the whole thing. Ethel Barrymore was nominated for a 1947 Oscar for Best Supporting Actress as Lady Sophie Horfield. Now, we spoke about Gregory Peck when we covered Notorious, and this is his final Hitchcock appearance. And we spoke about Charles Laughton when we covered Jamaica Inn, and this is also his final appearance. Dorothy Ann Todd, who played Gay Keane, was an English actress, singer, and film producer, initially a London-based theatre actress. She quickly began to accumulate walk-on parts in film, making her debut in Keepers of the Youth from 1931, and she had roles in These Charming People, The Ghost Train, The Water Gypsies, and The Return of Bulldog Drummond. For Alex Korda, Todd was in Things to Come, Action for Slander, The Squeaker, and South Riding. During World War II, Todd was in Poison Pen, Danny Boy, and Ships with Wings, but she concentrated latterly again on theater roles, putting in a memorable performance in Enid Bagnold's psychological thriller Lottie Dundas at the Vaudeville Theatre in 1943. This is her only Hitchcock film appearance, but she will be in Alfred Hitchcock Presents the episode Sylvia. Now, let me see if I can do this one. Okay, prepare that throat. The Baroness Alida Maria Laura Altenberger von Markenstein Fronberg was better known by her stage name of Alida Valli, or simply Valli, was an Italian actress who appeared in more than 100 films, including Mario Soldati's Piccolo Mondo Antico, Carol Reed's The Third Man, Michelangelo Antonioni's Il Grido, Luchino Visconti's Senso, Bernardo Bertolucci's 1900, George Franju's Les Yeux Sans Visage, and Dario Argento's Suspiria. In 1956, Valli decided to stop making movies, concentrating instead on the stage. She was in charge of a company that produced Broadway plays in Italy. While this is her only Hitchcock film appearance, she did do two radio adaptations, one for Spellbound in 1948, and one for The Parroting Case in 1949. Now, did you guys notice the Hitchcock cameo?
Carrying a cello case.
Yes, coming off the train. Now, this is not the first time that we've seen Hitchcock on the train. And I have this theory. What if all of these Hitchcock movies take place in the same universe, and Alfred Hitchcock is just aimlessly wandering from movie to movie with his cello? Because I think we've even seen him with a cello in a train before, haven't we not?
It was, he has a double bass on another one. But yeah, he, apparently he's like, I need a prop orchestra. Can I have a prop, please?
Yes. So yes, that's my new headcanon, is that all of these are in the same continuity, and Hitchcock is the same person all the time, just wandering aimlessly through his own...
Does that mean The Birds is chronologically last, though? Because it basically is like The Birds apocalypse.
Sure. Yeah, and Frenzy's a prequel.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
Works for you?
It's like that Disney timeline, yeah.
I was reading as well in the Alfred Hitchcock The Complete Films by Paul Duncan. There was something interesting that he said. So, while Hitchcock did have a lot of trouble with Selznick, he says, in fairness, Selznick had helped Hitchcock integrate himself into the Hollywood business world, had given him the opportunity to be his own producer, and helped him understand the mechanics of a coherent story and characterization. Selznick had also shown him that in Hollywood, it was the producer who had control of the final film. The only way Hitchcock could totally control his films was to become a producer, so he formed his own production company, Transatlantic Pictures, with his old friend Sidney Bernstein, and started making films the way he wanted them to be made. So, without Selznick, I mean, we might not have gotten the Hitchcock that we know, right?
Mm-hmm. So, well, that's typical of any producer that's so successful that he is bullheaded or hardworking or aggressive. You know, if he wasn't, if that wasn't his personality, he would have never achieved what he achieved. Mm-hmm. Right.
Excellent. Well, Chris, what did you think of this film? Was this a first time watch for you?
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of these kind of pre-real Hollywood Hitchcocks were the first ones I've seen. So yeah, watched this for the first time, and I'm like, it's not bad, but it's long. It's a very long film for what it is, and it's an interesting legal drama, and I think that's fine. But I would have enjoyed the element of it more rather than the soap. Like melodrama that was thrust onto it, like, oh, Gregory Peck, he's sort of obsessed and in love with the woman he's defending, but what about his wife? And I'm like, I'll be honest, I did not care. I really did not care. And Todd was really good as the wife. It's fine, and I think it's an interesting look, because you see the parallels of male-female relationships and marriage and all that sort of thing. But ultimately, it was fine. I'll be honest, the last scene... the last scene in the courthouse where there's lots of revelations and all that sort of thing. It did make me think of Legally Blonde. When it all goes a bit... Well, because it all goes a bit like, and of course, you couldn't have shot him because of your perm. I was fully expecting a moment like that. She's like, ah, yes, your lover's dead. And she just... It was very melodramatic. It was very sort of telenovela, soap opera, soap drama... and that's fine, but it's quite a weird mesh when you've got it in the confines of this legal thriller. I'd have enjoyed it a lot more if there was actually, it was like an investigation into, oh, did Mrs. Paradine actually do it or not? Because it wasn't so much that, it was more kind of like Gregory Peck wrestling with his soul about, oh, well, he needs to spend time with this woman to get close to his wife, and then his wife kind of absolving him of what is... kind of, but not really, this sort of emotional affair, and it's a weird one. It's very middle of the road for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tom, what'd you think? Was this a first time watch for you?
First time watch for me. A lot of times when we do our show, I will watch the movie the day we podcast, a few hours before, and I luckily watched this last night because it was long, and I enjoyed it, and I think I enjoyed it because it was different from what we're used to with Hitchcock. The like Chris was saying, it's a courtroom drama, a bedroom drama. It's a bit, like you were saying, soap opera-ish. And for me, I enjoyed it because it's different than what I'm used to watching. And I found the revelations and the twists and the turns interesting. And... again, just historically, seeing how court proceeded back in the day was very interesting. I found the mansions these people lived in were unbelievable. Like, I enjoyed a lot of elements of the film, for sure.
Yeah, like, seriously, who the hell has a frickin' picture of themselves on the headboard of their own bed?
I do. Sorry.
I'm like, that's really awkward if I suddenly tilt the camera and it just becomes a giant. Yeah. Well, I'm like, yeah. No.
But
lifestyles of the rich and podcast. Yeah. Anyway.
This is where all that...
But not only that, that carpet too. That carpet. Such long white carpet. Like, if I ran my vacuum over that thing, like, it would burn out within like 30 seconds.
Well, you can tell it's rich if it's white carpet. Like, if it, that's rich, when you know, like, oh yeah, I can just afford to have this replaced.
32 polar bears.
Yeah, yeah, all much. Stitched together. Just...
So, I don't know what I thought of this movie, so I'm still kind of processing it, because there were some scenes in it where I was, like, completely captivated, and there were scenes where I'm just like, oh my goodness, shoot me now. So, I'm not quite sure, and... like, a lot of the problems that I had is that, like, okay, so this is kind of an odd Hitchcock film in that normally the general Hitchcock thing is The Wrong Man. So in this case, I didn't know anything about this movie going into it. Nothing. I knew nothing about this movie. So, like, all these weird things were happening, and it kept making me think, well, where is this movie going? Like, when Charles Laughton's character looks at his wife and he looks at her shoulder, I'm like, so is this judge now going to be, like, a murderer, and he's going to kill this woman because he thinks she's some kind of a hussy? See, because she's showing off her shoulder. Like, that shot is, like, weird, and it never pays off. You know, like, it's this really weird shot. And I guess it maybe it does in that he's judging her, and this leads to his detesting Mrs. Paradine on the stand, I guess. But then I'm like, I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, this Gregory Peck guy is just captivated with her, and he's being a terrible lawyer. But Charles Laughton's character is a terrible judge because, like, you know, he's... I'm not a lawyer, but, I mean, I've seen a lot of legal dramas. And when the lawyer is like, okay, I'm done asking questions, the judge doesn't get to just start asking questions to help prove that this person is guilty. Like, I don't know, unless your British system is very different than what we see on American TV, I don't think that's how it works.
I can confirm that is not the case. The judge doesn't get to sort of like hit a button and go, right, my turn. Like, no.
Because the judge says again, like, this is decided by a jury, right? And the judge's job is to, like, maintain order in the court, especially in a murder trial when there's a jury. You maintain order, make sure things don't get out of hand. But it's up to the job of the lawyers to prove or disprove the guilt of the client. And then, based on that evidence, the jury decides it. But here's this judge who's just like, oh, like, you know, you're. I realize you just said you're done, but I'm going to ask him some more questions here. And the lawyer's like, no, I've proven the point that I want to prove, and that's my job to do it. So, I don't know, I had problems with that.
I kind of found that interesting because it's a bit more back and forth than you would get normally. And it made the judge a bit more of an entertaining character.
I would say entertaining, but I'll be honest, there were parts of it when I was watching them, I'm like, oh, this judge is, like, the worst. There were times I honestly hit, like, his last scene. I watched it, and I had to go back and rewatch it just to catch it all. I'm like, oh, this guy is, like, disgusting, and really, there's just some kind of, when I say toxic, I don't mean in that sense, but just kind of virulent, or it's a very weird scene where he's there with his wife, and he takes a sort of weird, almost serial killer, perverse idea of, like, oh, she, you know, she's gonna hang, and, you know, he's berating his wife and he's just domineering her, and to the point where she ends up sort of saying, oh, well, you know, I've always loved you, and you know, I'll always care. Like, that sort of thing. I just thought, oh my god, this is so messed up. And he's just, yeah, for me, because it is an interesting one, because you aren't supposed to sympathize with Mrs. Paradine, and particularly at the end and that sort of thing, but then when you have the judge's wife who's come along and says, are you sure there's nothing that can be done? You realise, in a way, some Paradine, yeah, she's killed her husband, not excusable, but she's also been found guilty and has managed, and, you know, her lover has killed himself, or, as they charmingly put it, he's gone and topped himself. Which is yes. I don't know if it's a Canadian thing, but it is a British expression. If you top yourself, you've committed suicide. So she has lost everything, and then when the wife asks for a sort of clemency, or just, is there nothing that can be done, he just turns on his wife, and it's a horrible scene, because she leaves in tatters, basically, does the wife, and then he just ends on him, and he does this, like, he's sort of picking his teeth to get food out, and he's like a sort of predator, and it's weird. It's weird. I know she's technically the villain, but he's the character I hated the most. Is that weird?
Okay, we're talking about Judge Horfield, and his wife is called Lady Sophie Horfield. And she's Ethel Barrymore, which is cool. I've seen her granddaughter's work. Anyway. But Ethel, like, Lady Horfield, every time we see her in the film, is very meek and very stressed, and very, she doesn't really have more than one mood in the film, so she's always been kind of pushed around by him, so that character, I think, is consistent throughout the film. Now, I'm finding all this stuff about him being a bad judge that wants to make people die and stuff, I didn't really catch that in the first time I watched it yesterday, and it's interesting hearing what Chris said, or what Brandon said when he read his trivia chapters, and what you guys are talking about. I didn't really catch that he came off really, really evil, a little biased maybe, but I never really saw him as a predator type that was deliberately trying to sway the jury or sway the case towards a conviction or a death sentence.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of got that. Like, so that was the only connection that I could make to that scene where he was looking at Mrs. Gregory Peck, whatever the character's name is. I'm sorry, I'm bad with names.
Mrs. Paradine.
No,
that's the wife, Ann Todd.
Ann Todd's character.
Gay Keen is her name.
When he's like staring at her shoulder, I'm like, what is this? And then the way he's like grabbing her and groping her and stuff, and then she like pulls herself away and he's like, oh, Gregory Peck, your wife seems to have had enough of me. She's lost her... And it's like, yeah, because you were just frickin' assaulting her. Like, you know, so, I don't know. This guy was not good. But, I mean, like, that's fine. Like, that's Charles Laughton, and he's doing a great job of acting this role, and it's fine to not like a character, but, boy, yeah, I did not like this character either, and Charles Laughton did a very good job of it.
Oh, yeah, that isn't attacking the actor or anything. Like, it does a perfect job of going, oh, this is creepy, oh, this is weird, and that sort of thing. And, you know, for a film that, you know, with the history and everything, it was such an uneasy production, and Hitch didn't really enjoy it, that sort of thing. You can't really tell with the acting. Like, everyone from kind of Ida Valley, who played Mrs. Paradine, and kind of Gregory Peck, who I'm always a fan of, and just all these fantastic actors. And you're like, yeah, like, casting-wise, it's a great, solid thing, but for me it is that kind of mishmash of where does it all it doesn't quite gel for me. It's not a cohesive film. And you know, for how long did you said it was, like an hour 44, you think?
I have it at 153.
One hour 53. Okay,
yeah.
I think you could have easily just taken like half an hour out and just made it a nice kind of 90 minute thriller. But yeah.
Like, we've always talked about Hitchcock being very talented with his cinematography in his films and very advanced for his eras of the different films. But there was some interesting cinematography blocking in this film that I don't recall seeing before, where there was a lot of framing where the characters were framed around a lamp or a lampshade or a candelabra. And that was very unique. That I noticed it as being unique. But if you recall, when Anthony Keene, the lawyer, the defense attorney, goes up north to the town to visit, you know, where the Paradine mansion is, and he ends up at a hotel, and then Latour, the valet, shows up uninvited, and basically confronts him and says, you shouldn't be in town, you shouldn't be investigating this, you're not welcome here. Now, I sent a still frame to Brandon and Chris when we did some pre-chat on the film, of the two of them, nose to nose, having a very stern discussion. But there's actually, the little diamonds hanging off of like a chandelier in the top of the frame of the video. And they're like icicles, literal icicles, hanging over top of these men as they're having a very stressful conversation. And I found that interesting that they took the time to do that. It's another little touch that a lot of people might not be watching the film going, hey, look, there's icicles in the shot. But it does add to the characters of the film.
Mm-hmm. There was a few really neat shots in this. Like, one that really blew my socks off was when Mrs. Paradine was sitting there in her box in the courtroom, and that butler guy, what's his name?
Latour, the valet.
And the camera, like, keeps her centered and is, like, spinning around her with him walking behind her. Like, what an amazing shot that was. I'm not sure if that was rear process. It may have been. That seems like the kind of shot that Hitchcock would have used a rear process for. But that was just stunning. Like, what an amazing, amazing sequence. Did that stand out for you guys?
I noticed that one. That one really blew me away when I saw it. And there's another shot with Latour and Mrs. Paradine in a interview room in the prison where there's a lot of phasing of lights, like turning, moving around them. So they were pushing the envelope for the photography, which is appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like with this movie, I didn't care about the romance of the story. Like, my favorite part was actually watching the cross-examination of, like, all the witnesses and stuff. I thought it was really well done, and I thought the dialogue was very well. But for the most part, this movie just didn't blow my socks off. Like, I found it so dry, and because of him being so captivated with his client, like, I just didn't buy it.
At one point, he's referred to as part lawyer, part lover, part husband. Mm-hmm. So he's got a lot going on, Mr. Gregory Peck.
That's a busy man.
Sorry, Chris.
No, it's fine. I was just going to say, it's interesting because it's a courtroom drama that is also about marriage and kind of extramarital affairs and all that sort of thing. So you have it with Gregory Peck and Anne Todd, and then you have it with the Paradines and Latour, and it's a shame those elements don't work better, because you have, you know, the idea of, like, oh hey, it's going to be more of an exploration of marriage, and is it ever acceptable to cheat, or, you know, if you know that your husband needs to spend time with a very beautiful woman, who, it's almost like, do you allow for an affair to save a woman who had an affair with with another man? Or I think those elements could have been more interesting, and they may well be in the book. I've not had a chance to read the book, but I just think I feel like I broke a record, but I just don't think they meshed particularly well. And like Brandon said, you don't hugely care about the characters, or you don't connect with them straight away, because I don't know if it's like it's not for the acting, it might just be the way the characters are framed, and the way that a lot of the women in the film seem to be quite passive and just quite, you know, reactive in a way. So in the final scene, you've got Gregory Peck, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna leave my gay, that's her name. And she's like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, leave her so that she doesn't have to live with the shame of being with a lawyer who messed up a case or accidentally defended a guilty woman or whatever it is. And they reconcile at the end, and there's a great shot of Gregory Peck and all that sort of thing. But it's interesting because he's taking the decision out of her hands, and it's one of the only times in the film where she actually kind of goes, well, no, we're going to stay in and fight and, you know, do everything. But she's choosing his happiness and his career and everything over, you know, an easier life. So I just think it's interesting. And there's a lot of, like, the relationships, like, between the father and the daughter who are assisting Gregory Peck. I think that relationship's interesting. I do love the asides on each day in court. Whenever Anne Todd's there, the daughter sat next to her, and she's just kind of going, okay, this is kind of cool, this. Why? I can't tell you now. I'll tell you later. And you're just like, my God, will you just tell her? I'm like, I like that, because she sort of just, you see Anne Todd just going, my God, what does that mean? And then the daughter just sort of leans in to frame next to her, which I always thought was kind of cool. Then she goes, oh yeah, it's quite interesting. Why? I'll tell you later. Like, just tell her. Just tell her, for God's sake. But no, I mean, it's for, because I think marriage is something that Hitchcock does talk about a lot in a different group of films, and it's not as if we're talking about, say, one of the kind of a classic courtroom drama like 12 Angry Men, or, oh God, what's that other one? I had it in my brain, can't remember it. No, it's gone. We're not talking. No, I'm really annoyed because it's quite a good.
My cousin Vinny is what you're thinking of.
Quite weird how that started trending a few months ago, though. People were really into My Cousin Vinny for some reason. No, I'm really annoyed. I can see it in my head. I think it's got William Holden in it.
This film could have been called 11 Angry Men and One Token Angry Woman Juror, because there was a woman on the jury, which was. Was that progressive?
Oh, got it. Sorry, it's not. It's witness for the prosecution. That's what I was thinking of. Sorry, gone. It could have been. I think it's the actual shots, I think, are quite interesting. So, like you said, there's the kind of 360 where, and it's because it's that sort of encircling, and you kind of think, okay, is he going to completely sell her out, or is he going to defender and all that sort of thing. And then I think the choice to have Latour kind of commit suicide, I mean, obviously he was never going to kill himself like on screen, but it's done in quite a cold way, and you never see any real indication. It's just kind of the next day, and there's murmurs, and he just goes, "Here, he's topped himself." And it's just, I think there are some interesting choices in the film that I think work well. I just don't think it works really well as a whole. I can't see this being in anyone's top 10 Hitch movies.
Yeah. Latour is developed, his character is developed as being a military man of honor and dedication, and he was committed to Paradine as a servant, as a valet, and they had their military background together. So Latour was definitely shown to be a person of morals, and that kind of helps to explain where the suicide may have would have happened because of his discipline. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like his code of his code of honor. You can see that. It's just it's because I'm seeing how you would film it today, and you'd see like, oh well, maybe he looks down at, I don't know, a razor or a rope or whatever it is. But I thought it was interesting. I thought it was solid, and there was some decent character work, and like I said, you can't fault the acting on it, but it's just not particularly standout for me.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody catch a reference to the film Notorious?
I didn't.
Oh no, what?
So they're touring the mansion, and that room's off. That room is out of bounds. You can't go into that room.
Okay,
that room was the bedroom for Latour, and I'm like, what's in there? Is there champagne? Is there nuclear secrets? I want to find out that story. And then there was another funny thing where they refer to her as a woman of easy virtue.
Oh, easy virtue.
Yes.
So there's a couple of Hitchcock kickbacks in there if you look deep enough.
Hitchcock's
maybe that's how
tits.
Bored I was. How bored I was with the film that I was distracted and looking for all those references.
It was a little weird finding out that this guy was also from Quebec, right, from Canada. Yeah. And they said he's from Three Rivers, and I'm like, no, he's from Trois-Rivières.
Hello. I thought the same thing. Three Rivers.
Three
Rivers. Where are you all from? I'm from Three Rivers.
Trois-Rivières. Anyways.
I don't know what that means, dear listeners.
There's a town, there's a city or a town in Quebec that Canadians refer to.
The English translation is Three Rivers, right? But it's just, I've never heard it called Three Rivers before, so.
It's, I've only ever, Brandon and I would ever have heard it called Trois-Rivières.
Oh, okay.
And that's one of the only times we ever get to sound like we know how to speak French.
Yep. Okay, I don't know, I don't have much more to add to this film. Like, it was okay. It's not my favorite Hitchcock film ever. Chris, is there anything you want to add to the discussion? Anything we missed?
Not that I can think of. I mean, we've really... I'm sure there's chunks of the film where we've just not mentioned anything, but it was fine. It was very serviceable, and if it was this experience that made Hitch decide, okay, I'm going to kind of start producing my own films and doing his own sort of thing, then it's no bad thing. It's a bit of a necessary evil, maybe, but it's still... It's still an okay courtroom drama if you strip away all the melodrama.
Mm-hmm. Tom, any final thoughts?
Well, I think we've covered it. I will rest my case. I have no more further comments for the court.
What would you give this as a rating?
I will give it 3.5 white powdered wigs.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
I will give it 3 broken glasses that I'm going to throw into the fire because it's too much!
Yeah, like, why are they throwing glasses that in the fire? Like, is it going to... Like, that servant's going to clean that up later.
I think it's just he just doesn't care about the servants because, like, they're going to have to pick it up.
What a guy. Yeah. What a guy. I also give it 3. I mean, like, there was some really good stuff. Like, the acting was good. The cross-examination was really fantastic. There was some really amazing camera work. It was a beautiful-looking film. I just didn't care that Gregory Peck fell in love with this woman. I just didn't care. I didn't care that she had an affair with this guy and he was mad at her because he loved his owner more, like his, like he loves the dude more. I don't know. I just didn't care about that stuff. So that's three. You know, it's fine. So it's better than L Street
Mr.
Calling.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
So it's better than Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I would say Mr. and Mrs. Smith is kind of the low bar it has to jump. It's like,
yeah, yeah. This one still walks right over Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So. Excellent. Chris, where can people find you when you're not refusing to look at your lover as he walks into the courtroom?
That hit a bit close to home. sorry. It's been a very long week. You can find me on Twitter at @hi_boy. Apart from Good Evening, I don't really have any podcasts to plug at the moment. Apart from, I will mention two of my friends. Well, actually three. So there is Matt Latham's Pick a Disc, which is about people talking about their favourite albums. There's Amy Walker's Eccentric Earth, which is about the unusual side of history. And then there is Emma Platt and Andrew Brooker's Mild Threat Pod, which is about horror. And it's two of my favourite people breaking down horror in a really fun, exciting way. So yeah, I will promote those three.
Tom, where can people find you when you're not falling in love with your client?
I have to write down my addresses for social media when we do the show, because I'm very rarely on there. But on Tom Caldwell 3000 is my Twitter. But I will remind people, check out the Zamboni's comedy specials, 1993. Some of the best work I did way back in my young days as a Shaw Cable volunteer producer guy. And, no, that's all my plugs I have to subtly drop during the show.
Excellent. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella, and then I've got a couple podcasts right now. I'm neck deep in my David Fincher rewatch leading up to his new film on Mank, so you can find that on the Nerd Party Network. It's called House of Fincher, with my friends Tristan Riddell and John Mills. You can find me on the United Federation of Podcasts with two shows. One's called Franchise Fatigue with my friend Zach. We cover movies, remakes, and sequels, and we are smack dab in the middle of our Planet of the Apes retrospective, which has been a lot of fun revisiting those. And you can also find me on Infinite Diversity, which is a new Star Trek podcast dedicated to all things new Star Trek. And that's a lot of fun with my friends Chrissy and Justin. Next time, we'll be talking Rope, which Tom and I are Woo-hoo! Looking forward to, because that's like one of my top five Hitchcock films. I love it. I'm really looking forward to it. You can find us on Twitter at Good Evening Pod. You can send us an email, goodeveningpodcast@hotmail.com. I don't think we've ever gotten an email, so somebody send us an email and we'll read it out on the show. All I keep getting is these people trying to, these Nigerian princes trying to get me to buy things. That's all I ever
those
get.
Those are totally legitimate offers.
Totally legit.
Somewhere out there's the Nigerian prince going, oh, but I love the podcast. Why will they not take my money?
I tried to give them $1 million. This is the thanks I get.
This is the thanks. They wanted to produce our show. Take a listen to our good friends Annie and Catherine and their show Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Presents podcast. Thank you so much to the gents over at the Fandom Podcast Network for hosting our show. You can find our show in their feed as well as in our own independent feed. And as always, thank you to the master himself, Jason Cullimore, for creating our wonderful theme music. We love it. But that's all for this time. Until then, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.